Welcome to Great Minds, this very special Climatech edition, as we talk to someone whose company I really enjoy. And Jessica, we haven't had a lot of time together, but I think I really like you, and I think you like me also. And we just seem to really get along and see the world quite similarly. With us today is our dear partner from State Street, Jessica Donahue. Jessica is the Executive Vice President and Head of Global Investment Insights, Sustainability, and Impact for State Street, one of the great, great financial institutions this country's ever produced. They are a big, big partner of Climatech, and absolutely thrilled to have you. So thanks so much for doing this, Jessica.
I'm very happy to be here, Matt.
I noticed you didn't say anything when I said that I think we like each other. You were silent there.
Yeah, that too. Absolutely.
You know what? I think upon review, she may not like me that much. Okay, let's have some fun. And we're going to talk a lot about what State Street is doing, your career, and we have a similarity in that we've both sort of been at the same place for a long period of time. I think that's unusual in today's world. People tend to move around so much. You've had a great run at State Street, I think more than 20 years. It's impressive, but I want to go back, all the way back, to Winrock International. And I want to go back a number of years here and talk about, I find those early jobs, those early experiences, for me it was internships. When I went to Emory, I was an intern at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce. This was 1984, 85. And I feel those experiences really shaped me. Let's go back now. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, your time in Minnesota. I love the Golden Gophers. What a great, great school that is. But let's talk about those early days as a project assistant for Winrock International in a small town in Arkansas.
Yeah. So you're going back deep in the archives here to, you know, a time that I would say is one of the times in my career that is the most related to what I do now, because you mentioned the long tenure at State Street. I actually just hit I'm starting my 24th year at the company, which is amazing. And I've moved through many, many roles, but the time at Winrock was, you know, I'd say one of those times that really shaped me and my career. I had just finished my undergrad, at the University of Minnesota. As you say, I'm a Gopher. I'm also, you know, a Minnesotan, so born and raised, and ended up going to the state school for many reasons. The Big Ten had a great internship at that point. In the internships, I think there were 24 different internships that summer, all in the area of international development. And I had done some backpacking between my sophomore and junior year of college that got me into the Middle East, I mean, Syria, Israel, Egypt, et cetera. And it really changed my outlook on things. And it's what really pushed me towards international development. So I apply for these internships thinking I'll finally get out into the world, go international. It's going to be amazing. And I got the internship in literally rural Arkansas. So other kids got, you know, DC or, you know, other locations with World Bank, IMF, and I'm at Winrock, literally on Pettigean Mountain in the middle of Arkansas. But I learned a great deal from that internship, and it turned into a job. And they sent me to Senegal for about 4 months for an amazing project where I met a professor from Virginia Tech. And that's how I ended up at Virginia Tech doing a master's in agricultural and applied economics.
A great story. You mentioned Minnesota, such a great, great place. I have a lot of friends there. Been to that great baseball stadium, the Target Field. I think it's just one of the great, great places to see a baseball game. There's a real grounding to people from Minnesota. And they talk about, you know, Midwest values or, you know, there's lots of different words that people use to describe it, but I think that's all kind of true. What's your take on that?
So, it's interesting because when I moved out to the East Coast, there were things I really loved about the East Coast. And I've been in Boston in quite some time, married a Bostonian, raised two Bostonian children. But there is something different about maybe the Midwest that is, you know, I guess, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, get things done, and tend to do it with a smile on your face and trying to be friendly, right? So we're a friendly group. I have definitely had moments in my career where I just click with somebody and then I find out later they're from the Midwest, maybe because there's just a way of being. But I do think maybe too, just taking the time to get to know people a little bit more. But, you know, given all those things, I still love being on the East Coast. And, you know, it's been, you know, quite some time since I moved here.
Yeah, there is definitely a different feel to the different parts of the country. And, you know, I think when people say salt of the earth, you know, that I would think of the Midwest first. You know, I don't think, clearly my accent, you know, confirms instincts that I am indeed a New Yorker. I don't think that New Yorkers are unfriendly. I don't think East Coast people are unfriendly. But I think, you know, we walk much more with our heads down. And I think in the Midwest, people walk much more with their heads up and will make eye contact and will, you know, say hello to someone they don't know. Here, I think people are just trying to get someplace and everything's a hassle getting around. And, you know, you're just sort of moving and grooving and staying in your own self, which I don't necessarily think is good or a badge of honor. But there is everybody I know from Minnesota and the business people that I deal with there. There's a great ad agency out there, Cole McVoy, Christine Fruchti and her team, big, big partners of ours at Advertising Week for years. And I remember when I went there, Target invited us to come out and speak to a group of their executives. And she said, you must come by the agency and see it. And we must take you to lunch. And she didn't have to do either of those things. You know, and they were so proud to show us everything and took us to a great place. And then I ended up getting the tickets and took her to the ball game. It was the Yanks and the Twins were playing in the playoffs. But I really love it out there. I'm glad we got to talk a little bit about Minnesota because that doesn't come up all the time.
You know, many people don't really register that, you know, the Twin Cities for years has been at the top of the list, I think, of having the most kind of diverse business community because of just the number of private companies as well as publicly listed companies. So it is, you know, it's an amazing place to do business. It does have kind of a culture of its own and a little bit slower, which, you know, isn't always bad.
Not a bad thing. And not to leave out St. Paul. Minneapolis gets all the press, but wonderful things in St. Paul. I know we've talked about that too. Okay. So you talked about the internship really, in a sense, setting you up for and tying back to what you do today. What is that tie? I didn't get that.
So it's a good question. I think the tie is, you know, at some level, economic growth is, you know, kind of maybe the thing that runs through that. What really struck me when I was doing that internship and the work that we were doing through the World Bank, I think it was a World Bank funded project that I was on in Senegal, and we were working with the Peace Corps, and you were seeing, you know, people really band together on important issues. And those important issues there at that time was actually salinization issues in, you know, with farming. It was farmers who were mainly growing rice, but they were having the salt in the soil was too much. So we were using different types of growing vegetables and legumes in order to leach salt from the soil. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, economic prosperity and, you know, good outcomes for people globally, and that those good outcomes, you know, lead to many good things, including, you know, I would just say bringing people up, in some of the hardest kind of hit areas really does lead to, you know, just better outcomes for everyone in the world, right? I mean, from global trade to, you know, the macro environment to geopolitics, everything improves when people's lives get better, and economic growth is a real opportunity for everybody. So I think, you know, taking on this role at State Street, I really started in our research functions, and that research, a lot of it was on capital flows and looking at emerging market flows and investments in emerging markets. And then over the years, real-time inflation and the work that Roberto Rigobon and Alberto Cavallo have done on real-time inflation indicators and price stats. And, you know, there's just sort of this theme of then, you know, data and analytics with ESG and all this work that I did with many others at State Street over the years. My most recent role really helping our asset owner clients globally as they think about things like asset allocation. But that really does get to now, you know, how do we think about sustainability broadly? The sustainability does have an element of climate, actually a driving element of climate now, right? The health and safety of people in the United States, but many countries around the globe, is at risk in certain ways because of what is going on with climate, be it water in Mexico or additional storms even here in New England, you know, that mitigation and then the economic prosperity that can come from, you know, actually this climate transition. To me, that's just kind of more of this same story of how do we make the world a better place for more people. I think climate is one of those areas now that's really front and center, which is part of what we look at with the sustainability role that I have, as well as other issues, but climate's certainly one.
Okay, so we're going to get to that, but let's ask one broader question. You talked about that early experience going to a place like Senegal. A couple years ago, I had Steve Van Zandt from the E Street Band on Great Minds. And you might recall that he had left the band, if you're a fan of Bruce, for about 20 years. And it wasn't because he had a fight with Bruce, but it was because he got very politically active. And he said that when they went to Europe for the River Tour, this was in, I guess, the mid-80s, his eyes opened up. And a lot of the imagery that he had in his own head about our country and Americans, we tend to think that we wear the white hats everywhere, changed his views. Talk about your perceptions as a young, you were, you know, wait, about 21, 22, 23. How old were you when you went to Senegal?
I was 23. Yeah. 23.
Talk about what you thought going and what you thought coming back about our role in the developing part of the world.
You know, one of the things that I would say is that I went over for that part of my, what was now a job, but I went over alone and I had an apartment and had a French teacher who I was able to get through my role. And I had a local, call it manager of the work that I was doing. But here I was, 23, in Dakar and kind of making my way. There were a lot of things about that experience that were pretty profound. But one of them was, you know, I grew up in the Midwest and I actually grew up going to the church that Prince went to, downtown Minneapolis, Park Avenue Methodist Church. And so I did have a, call it, multiracial upbringing in certain ways, but I lived in a suburb of the Twin Cities that was not multiracial. And here I was in Dakar, where everyone was African. I wouldn't say they were Black because they wouldn't describe themselves probably that way. But everyone, for me, you know, I look different, completely different from pretty much everybody. The life experience that people had, this was my first time living for any length of time in a developing nation, was in some ways profoundly the same and in other ways very different. You know, I think it just broadened so many horizons for me, but it also made me realize that I had a pretty narrow view of the US, of our role, and got me certainly thinking about the fact that I wanted to be part of a, you know, a global company at least, or a global effort. That has been one of the things that I've loved about working at State Street, is that from the clients to the people who are my colleagues, they're all over the world, often all over the world with a fiduciary duty to make lives better. Again, you know, when we work with asset owners globally, pension funds, foundations, endowments, sovereign wealth, they have fiduciary duties to the people that they serve. And that's inspiring. It certainly made me think that I would never want to have a role that didn't have an element of an international scope to it.
Yeah, I love your answer. And, you know, one of the things that I worry about is this whole business of isolating ourselves from the world. And let's take care of, you know, we live in a global community. And you're watching now in the UK, you know, the impacts of the decision on Brexit, which was all, you know, a false set of circumstances and promises which never materialized. You don't want them, whoever they are, coming here and taking your jobs. Well, their racism was a little different than ours. It was a lot of Eastern Europeans, you know, the Poles, the Romanians, the Hungarians, who work in the hospitality industry, who drive the trucks or lorries, as they call them. And the Brits don't want those jobs. And now they've got huge shortages, and they're not bringing manufacturing jobs back to the north in England. That ship has sailed. The English are not going to work for the, you know, the wages that someone in Southeast Asia or China is going to work, whether they are volunteering or not volunteering for that particular job, you know, as it may be in some of those countries. But we are very much part of a global community. And State Street really, I think, understands that, you know, in a very visceral way.
Well, I think you're very right on that, that State Street does understand that we are part of a global community. And our CEO, Ron O'Hanley, has been very active in trying to make sure we build those relationships globally. And at this point, 40% of our business is not from North America. But you bring a really interesting point about demographics, Matt, because I do think that that's one of the driving forces that, you know, we'll get into climate, but in that discussion maybe, but the demographic discussion is a really interesting one. And there was a foreign affairs article recently that basically outlined that the working population over the next 50 years is really growing in Africa, right? I think it's 420 million new members of the workforce will come out of Africa, and only 8 million will come out of the rest of the world or something like this. The population of working people isn't growing in most of the world. So at some point you have to wonder if people start bidding for immigrants, right?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, there is going to come a time where there's just not with the birth rates being what they are all over the world, there won't be enough people, and AI just can't do everything, right? It is going to, I think, pretty profoundly change things over the next 20, 30 years, as long as we take good care of our climate.
As long as we do. Yeah, we're big fans of Africa. We launched Advertising Week in Johannesburg last year, and we brought Kevin Hart to Africa. We partnered with the Mandela Foundation and another group that I'm going to try to get you involved with, actually, Education Africa. And it's the only continent in the world that's growing, to your point. And the average age is less than half of what it is here or the UK or Europe. So, okay, let's shift gears. When we first connected, it was a very fast yes, all in for climate tech. Sustainability and concerns about the climate crisis and acting on those concerns is a very big part of the DNA of the company. I know Ron feels very strongly about it, and that your career has evolved at State Street into this role says that the company takes it seriously, taking someone as senior as you are and giving him that broad remit. Where does that commitment from State Street come from? Is it just Ron's personal belief and it filters on down? Is it deeper than that? Talk about where that commitment comes from.
You know, it's a really good question, but I do think it comes kind of from, we think about climate in three groups. One, we think about ourselves, you know, we're a servicer to the biggest institutions in the world, right? And our job there is to really make sure that we're developing the services and capabilities that our clients need to chart their own course. And a good number of them are very much, they've set net zero commitments. They are very dedicated to changing their portfolios. And we are here to make sure that they meet their goals, meaning that we have to have the right services and capabilities to assist them on their sustainability journey. So by just listening to our clients all over the globe, and that may be more in Europe in some instances, but really this is a global phenomena that many of our clients, they're in a transition phase, or they're modifying their portfolios, or they're taking advantage of the economic opportunity that is the climate transition, right? Being climate tech, which we're very excited about for the conference, the inaugural conference, it's about new technology, and that new technology can lead to amazing outcomes. And those outcomes are investments, and those investments can benefit pensioners. And so I think we're here to serve our clients. And on our asset management side, that would be the case as well, that our clients are looking for us to create product that allows them to express their views, that allows them to make investments in many of these areas. And then as a company, we do a lot where we're in a brand new building this year that's Platinum LEED certified. And we think a lot about our use of energy, bottom line, how we're using resources, who we're partnering with. So those kind of areas, again, as a servicer, a manager, and as a company, you know, we think a lot about that. And bottom line, we think about it because we are here to serve our shareholders, right? But we're here to serve our clients and make sure that we show up as a great corporate citizen in the communities in which we serve. And those communities are all over the globe. So that, I think, means that it's in the DNA in many ways, but we have a great leader in Ron, who's very dedicated, again, to this space.
Well, I love that, you know, the commitment is so real, and both as to how the company does business internally, including your headquarters and starting there, but that this is really part of who the company is and how you show up in the market. And State Street has a sort of an interesting track record there. I mean, we first came to know you years ago through the Feelers Girl campaign many years ago, which was a big, big hit on Madison Avenue. And I think McCann was the agency for it, as I recall. And we did a lot of work with them and showcased it at our event. But I love that you stand for something. And that's got to feel pretty good, being part of a company that stands for something.
It does. It does feel good. And I think it's something that, you know, motivates our employees, especially young employees who, you know, really, you know, want to see, they would like to work some, you know, for a company that does show up and try to, you know, make a difference in the world. I would also say, though, that, you know, we're careful to say that it's our clients who decide their journey, right? We're not here to tell our clients what to do. We really are here to provide product or capabilities to help them chart their course, but they choose their adventure. And so this can be sensitive and it can be political, but we want to make sure that our clients feel that we are not in any way pushing them in one direction or pushing our, what we call it, corporate values on our clients. It's for them to tell us what they need from us to meet their objectives. And that's really what we try to do in service to our clients.
Very, very fair. Talk about, you know, at your level, you're leading the planning for the group globally, of course. If we were to take a peek at your blackboard, what would be two or three of the top priorities for the remainder of 24 and 2025 looking ahead?
Oh, it's a very good question. You know, we're refreshing our strategy around sustainability and really looking at that, again, through the eyes of our clients and what they need. How are we thinking about it as a company? We're focused on some efforts there that we're excited about just to kind of refresh a bit. We are looking forward to some of the global moments, you know, very much excited about what you all have done with climate tech. We're gearing up for New York Climate Week. We've got a Nature COP and a Climate COP coming up later in the year. And so there are some different efforts we're involved around those items. And then I would say, like so many other companies, we're gearing up for the change from what was voluntary reporting around ESG to regulatory reporting, particularly with CSRD and some of the new EU regulation around reporting. That, I think, is certainly making us think about how we're organized. Are we set for that? And then we have a number of initiatives that we're, you know, that we're working on broadly. But it's a rich area because when you think about sustainability in a company like State Street, it can span everything from how we manage the client lifecycle to, you know, how we deploy credit to how the products we build, the thought leadership we create. You know, there's just many areas of State Street that are involved. And it's also one of the things that makes this job so interesting and fulfilling is the fact that it is really a team effort across the company.
That's a great answer. As we start to wrap, one of the things that you said, Jessica, is that, you know, to a great degree, your job is to, you know, help hold the hand of the clients, and the clients are really, you know, driving the bus and you're sort of on it and helping them navigate their journey. Is there a particular client you can, you know, you can name a name or not name a name. This is not investigative journalism, but where somebody did something, you said, that was really clever. I really thought that was a great thing that they came up with that ties into, you know, the broader theme of sustainability.
You know, that I think of clients as an opportunity to learn very actively. So I love engaging with clients because I'm constantly learning from clients. So there couldn't be just one. But I do think the area that we're collaborating with some clients that to me is the most interesting right now is this area of blended finance, because it really is, how do you bring together private money and at times government money, philanthropic money, and International Development Bank money, insurance? How do you come together as an ecosystem? Because you made this point earlier, Matt, that we're really one world, right? And when we think about the ecosystem of finance, it can come together in some pretty amazing ways and support development or some great and interesting projects. So there are different firms that we're working on right now, some of this through partnerships that we're involved in, that we're looking at how we create blended finance solutions to do things like invest in Africa with green technology, 400 and call it 20 million additional workers. They need electricity. They need access to, I'd say, the same sorts of technologies that we have access to in order to be as productive as possible. So some of the investments that are happening and the way that we can work with our clients on blended finance opportunities is to me just really fascinating. And nobody has really cracked it yet. Okay, so it's a problem that there are examples and we're actually working with others to come up with case studies, but it's an area that if we get really good at it, it could make a massive difference in funneling investment into green technology and green infrastructure globally.
Whether it's population growth or just need for more power, we had a conversation for the Climate Tech edition of Great Minds that we're doing with the founder of Nano Nuclear. And their commercial product won't come online for another 6 or 7 years for the first actual deployments. But what we were talking about in the conversation with James was about the need for power, that all the AI and all this technology is dramatically increasing the needs for more power. Underneath the cloud, there has to be an engine somewhere. And so I think this is a big, big part of the equation here that isn't talked about enough. And, you know, that need is going to create opportunity somewhere else. And I have to believe, you know, it's technology here, and it, which is really the heart of what Climate Tech is all about, is how technology is advancing the ball in solving our biggest challenges and meeting our growing needs. I think that's going to speed everything up, because third world opportunity, first world, I need it today, you know, to keep my engine running. So I think we're in for quite an exciting ride over the next 10 years or so.
Well, I agree with you. And I think I heard someone say recently, I think it was another podcast, that, you know, technology was always the cool place to invest. And people were always thinking technology, technology. But AI is now the connection to energy. Now, to really make technology investments meet their full potential, you need that source of energy. And it's really making, you know, the tech investors think, I've got a dependency here. I better understand the energy sector a lot better. And that might not be a bad thing at all, right? And to your point, there are some really interesting technologies that our exploration, there's hydrogen, there's many of these areas that have a real room to grow, but may take a lot of time to come online. And so we need more investment.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. Well, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I'm so excited to see you soon. Ron is part of our kickoff for all of Climate Tech with Governor Healey and Linda Henry, the Globe, in conversation as we kick the whole thing off. We got a great breakfast with you as well that we're looking forward to. And mostly, I can't thank you for your emphatic and immediate warm embrace. You really, really understood immediately what we were trying to accomplish, and were very quick, all in. And that doesn't happen a lot. And I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed getting to know you, and thank you for doing this little podcast with us. I appreciate it.
Well, Matt, it has been a pleasure to get to know you, and you know, our wonderful little lunch in Cambridge, you know, you can be assured I like you too. I really look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, geez.
All right. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me. Take care.